You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla DeRoche. And I have a few people from Teen Court here with us today. Mr. Ott, why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure. And I'm Andrew Ott. I'm the legal advisor for Kodiak Teen Court, and I'm here with two fellow bar members from Teen Court. I'll let them introduce themselves.
I'm Robert Otto.
And I'm Stephanie Menjivar.
And could you repeat yourself?
Stephanie Menjivar.
All right, awesome. So, Mr. Ott, why don't you explain for the listeners what Teen Court is?
Teen Court is a diversionary panel in the community. We have 12 youth courts in Alaska. Kodiak Teen Court's one of the programs. And we provide a forum whereby students who do get in trouble, delinquency matters, can go to a youth court program to have their cases either tried or adjudicated and then ultimately sentenced by fellow students who act as their attorneys and also as their judges.
All right. And what's the origin of Teen Court here in Alaska?
Well, in 1995, Judge Cole, who's now our Superior Court judge, actually started the program with a bunch of other people as a way for handling juvenile cases that were going through adult court and didn't seem to be, were limited as to what the court's sentence could be imposed. So with the diversionary panel, we have a little bit more carte blanche as to what we can do. We can ask the student offender in a criminal mischief case where they vandalized a fence or something like that to rebuild the fence or repaint the fence, that sort of thing. Whereas in adult court, you can't do that. So it allows some much more interaction between the community and the criminal or the juvenile defendant.
How is it decided what range of responsibility the teen court students would have? Because some people would feel this is a lot of responsibility for young people to have. So what is the power?
Well, the premise comes from Title 47 in the Alaska statutes that basically says that a diversionary panel can be set up and that has to meet certain guidelines. And then it was up to the individual programs around the state as they start setting themselves up as to the bylaws and procedures by which they'll operate under. And so we don't do felony cases. That's not going to happen in youth court. But we can take on misdemeanor cases, and those are going to be referred from Division of Juvenile Justice, so the local juvenile probation officer, Tim Luther, will get these youth offenders coming in through the criminal justice system and say, you know what, I have someone here who probably would benefit from going through teen court. And so then that will be a referral, and then we go through that process. The other kinds of cases that youth court gets here is sentencing cases relating to alcohol consumption, tobacco, and use of marijuana, that sort of thing.
Okay, and if anyone has any questions out there, maybe you're stuck at home due to the weather, which is pretty bad today, and if you have any questions, you can call 486-3181 and pose some questions to some of our participants here. Robert, why don't you talk a little bit about how you got involved in Teen Court?
Well, it's actually kind of funny because at home, I would argue a lot with my mom, and she heard about Teen Court, and she's like, okay, you can argue there. So I went into the class, and I went through it, passed the bar exam, and I still argue at home, but it's a really fun group.
So what have you discovered is the difference between arguing and argument or debating, or what do you do in Teen Court?
What I do in teen court is much more structured and not angry. It's not, you don't have emotional connection to the person, so you can be more fair and nice.
What roles have you played in teen court?
All of them. I've done currently I'm a judge, but for a while I was an attorney for both prosecution and defense, and I was also a bailiff, which is just the person who says, all rise, court is now in session, and presses the record button. But, yeah.
So you say you're currently a judge, right?
Yes.
What does that involve?
What that involves is me going, like, to the teen court office a day or two before case night and looking over the case file and just getting a sense for what I have to deal with that day. And then I'll go to the courtroom, be there for 2 or 3 hours, and I'll be doing 2 or 3 cases. I'll be in my robe with 2 other judges. We use 3 judges, so it's more fair because we have a broader range of opinion. And we'll go in, we'll listen to the case, we'll listen to the facts, we'll hear, like, testimony from the defendant and the parents and stuff. And then all 3 of us will go back into our deliberation room where we decide what overall would be a fair sentence. And afterwards we go and we tell them why we chose what we chose, because then it's not just you have to do this because we say so. I think the group is really good because you can relate to the defendants because you're in that same age group, and it's not like an adult saying you did something bad so now you have to do this. It's your peers going, hey, that wasn't very good, so here's something you can do to help the community feel safer again, help them, like, rebuild, you know?
Mm-hmm. And right now, teen court is recruiting for more kids to come in and participate. So
yes.
What would you tell someone who's interested in teen court? What are some of the reasons they would get involved?
Well, it's great on a resume, first off. Great for college or just a job. But we also, I don't know, the group is really, we have a great group of people in teen court. It's really welcoming, and you get to do a lot with the community, so you make a lot of connections within the town with, like, stores and businesses. So you become more mature and part of a community of, like, the adults. And, yeah.
And do you want to talk a little bit about your experience with teen court?
Yeah, so I've been involved since 8th grade, and I'm a sophomore now, so I'd say about 3 years. And it all started when people from teen court came into my classroom and talked about what teen court is about, and they also mentioned there was extra credit. So I think that's what really convinced me to join. But as the years have gone by, I've really enjoyed it because it's like a learning experience for yourself, and it really teaches you, like, the seriousness of committing crimes in town, and there are, like, real consequences. So teen court's been a really good impact to my life. And I've been an attorney, and I've been on both prosecution and defense, and what you do is you go to the teen court office and you get assigned a case, and the first thing you should do is look over the name and make sure you don't have a personal connection with them to make sure there's no conflict. And then you review the case and you kind of write up a summary of what happened. And then you will present that to the judges at case night. And then you kind of just get to have an interview with a defendant as well to get their side of the story. And you ask them questions if they're involved in any school activities or if they've gotten any awards, and that kind of helps the judges see that they aren't a bad person. They are also involved in other things. So that's what I've done.
Yeah, and what role have you enjoyed the most, or what have you been most challenged by?
I think prosecution, because you have to find, I don't know, because defense you kind of just try to look at the facts and try to help the judges see, like, they are a good person. But then prosecution, you kind of have to point the bad things about the case. And it's harder for me to make someone look bad in front of the judges. I don't know.
Right, but you have to learn. It's part of your job.
Yeah.
And you have to take both roles. It kind of helps you to get the 2 different perspectives.
Yeah. I'm kind of looking into becoming a judge right now, so having experience on prosecution and defense will help me if I do become a judge.
Okay, so you need preparation for the judge role.
Yes.
Is there like a hierarchy of one you build to get to another role?
I think you just really start off, if you really want to take the easiest role, you would be bailiff, and then you would become, you'd take charge in the attorney role and choose either prosecution and defense, and then the highest would be becoming a judge. Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Ott, when you're teaching and mentoring the kids, what kind of texts do you introduce them to?
Sure. Our youth court program actually has a manual that we actually produce, and actually Ms. Turner and I, which is the other adult in the program, Darlene Turner, have actually spent the summer rewriting the manual in order to either, one, make it a little bit more effective for the students who get it, and then, two, any updates in the law, and that's where I've been kind of busy with. In there, the students get this free from us when they start the course, and they get to keep it for the duration at the time that they're involved with teen court, and they can use it as a reference manual down the road. So it has all the statutes in it that they're going to be concerned about. They've got some nice little ideas as to how to prepare for a case if they're a defense attorney rather than a prosecutor. They've got some other ins and outs as to what they need to be sensitive to by the time they get to the case night.
Okay, and so you mentioned that you are updating the text for any changes in law. Can you speak about some of the changes that there have been?
Sure. I mean, the big change in law lately has been SB 91, which changed a lot of the criminal stuff. But for youth courts, it wasn't so much that as it was another law that came in that affected the minor in possession of alcohol or consuming alcohol statute, which is the MIP statute or MCA statute as we refer to it. There, in the past, it used to be that the first-time offender would be go to the adult court, get arraigned, either plead guilty or no contest, and then have the choice of either being sentenced by the adult court or refer to the teen court program for sentencing. And then the teen court program would get it, meet up with the youth offender, and then the students, the bar members, would then prepare the case for sentencing. Now the law has changed where that youth court doesn't get the first-time offense. It only gets the offense after what we call a repeat offense. So the current law says first-time offender gets a $50 fine, and that's it, and that's all in adult court. A repeat offender can come in and go to the state court and basically say, I'd like to go to a diversionary panel and have my case heard there. So that's where the youth court gets involved. And it's a lot different than what it was before. The attorneys and the judges now have to look at somebody who's not a first-time offender and say, hey, we're going to get you some alcohol education so you can hopefully learn from this. Now it's going to be much more of, okay, it sounds like you might have a problem here. We need to address this before it gets into be a major problem for all of us. And so it may be much more of an alcohol screening with potential treatment. And that the court can do, our youth court can do, but it's a little bit more involved.
Was that change with teen court in mind?
No. What happened was is that, from what I hear, the law was written and it was being discussed and in at the floor, and apparently there was a writer that came in that allowed the they had to basically negotiate to get the diversionary panel back in.
What other laws have changed?
Well, in SB 91, there's been a readjustment of all the misconduct and controlled substances law, so all the drug cases. Where before marijuana law, the what we call Mix 6, misconduct and controlled substance in the sixth degree, was basically a Class B misdemeanor and stayed there. Now what the law has done is reclassified it, both in it's no longer a Mix 6, it's a Mix 5, and it's still a Class B misdemeanor, but they've tried to make it much more a violation in the sense of the way the language is written. So it still means that we still can deal with it in teen court. It doesn't change that. It just basically changes the nomenclature.
And we're talking about federal law?
No, we're talking about state law.
State law. Okay. And so how long was the law, because this, how long has this been in process, this change?
SB 91, I think it's been around a discussion of the whatever the cycle is for the legislature for 2 years before they actually instituted it. And so last July when they signed it into law.
Wow, so this has been discussed for 2 years?
Yeah, it's been an open discussion, and the reason for SB 91 was because of financial issues, and we all know that the state's in a bit of a budget crisis. So in terms of trying to save money and keep people out of prison, which costs a lot of money per prisoner, those people that have thought that, well, we can save a little bit of money by changing some of the laws so we don't put people in prison for indefinite periods of time.
All right. And on that topic, and you can tell me as much as you're allowed to within confidentiality, can you talk about some of the cases that you've
seen? Can certainly talk about the kinds of cases, yeah. Mm-hmm. You guys want to talk about it?
Sure. Most of the cases that I've done have been minor in possession cases. It's usually a lot of either alcohol or tobacco. But, we rarely have vandalism, which is a great thing. But when it happens, I don't know.
And when you're involved in those kinds of cases, what kind of sentence do you give out, typically? Or your teammates give out?
Typically, for a minor in possession of alcohol case, we have to give the alcohol screening and the class at CANA.
Education
at CANA. And depending on the case, we'll usually also give community work service, which is we make you go out into the community and, like, do cleanup or volunteer to help at, like, Salvation Army or something. So you're getting back in there, showing people you're a good person. We'll also have essays, which some of them aren't very creative. We'll just have an essay, like, negative effects of alcohol, but I don't know, we've had some really creative sentences. We had one that was, like, pick up all the trash at the beach, like this community work service, not an essay. Pick up all the trash at the beach and put it in bags and then take a picture of all the bags. So, I don't know, you help the person and help the community at the same time.
So, I wanted to ask, do you guys remember what the goals of restorative justice is?
Ooh. Okay.
Oh, on the spot.
There is community, like restoring the community, right?
Community safety.
Yeah. Community safety, the responsibility for your action.
Accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't, what's the third one? That's the harder one.
Does it start with an R?
Starts with a C.
Oh.
Competency development.
Competency.
And what's that? That's a fancy word. What does it mean?
It's giving you skills so you can do that instead of going out and doing drugs. You can, like, get a job instead of drinking or something.
Did they pass?
Yes, thankfully. A little prompting on my part, but yeah, they got it.
As far as your experience, Mr. Ott, goes, with other teen courts in different regions, is substance abuse a big problem with the kids who come to teen court?
It is. A major problem, actually. Especially if it's something that occurs on school grounds. If you bring marijuana into school grounds, that can be actually a felony level. So that gets to be a very problem for the youth offender. So if it's a first-time offense for this person and they've not been through a diversionary panel like Kodiak Teen Court, then this is an opportunity for them to kind of right the wrong and get their act together. So the whole model of youth court is different than adult criminal court. criminal court in adult court in the courthouse down the street here is designed for punitive deterrence on basically accountability. Here with youth court, we're looking at restoring the youth offender to society so that they don't make the same mistake twice. And the basis of it is that all kids make mistakes. We just need to learn from that. So that's why I was actually asking them what the goals are for restorative justice, which is competency development, accountability, and community protection. And it's different than basically putting someone away or fining them for some sort of criminal conduct.
Is there a point where the case becomes so severe or so difficult that it can't be directed to teen court?
Yes, that's at the discretion of the juvenile probation officer, who will look at the case and say, okay, we're going to ask the youth court to look at this, and then Ms. Turner and I will actually review the case to determine whether or not, if it's questionable, she'll actually call me and say, hey, you need to take a look at this and see what you say, see what you think. And if it's something that's too egregious, that something's a little bit too far for us to do, then we'll just refer it back to the juvenile probation officer, and they'll take it into the state court system.
And I'm also curious about your background in law. How did you were you a lawyer? Are you currently a lawyer?
Yes, I am a lawyer. currently practicing. Feel like I need two of me in order to keep up with my workload. Mm-hmm. I have been practicing since 1989. I came up to Kodiak because of the Exxon Valdez oil spill and really haven't quite left.
Mm-hmm. And what areas of law do you have experience in?
Well, with the Exxon Valdez, obviously that's a mass tort and class action and environmental issues. But that also created a whole bunch of different kinds of claims, business claims, native subsistence claims, land claims, all these various sorts of things that I had to kind of brush up on. After that, I got into criminal law. I actually did criminal. I clerked for a criminal attorney when I was in law school. And actually was a criminal investigator for a period of time. So I do criminal law, also do family law. In Kodiak, it's a small community that you have to be a Mr. Goodwrench in a lot of things, and you're an expert of none. So anything that requires some expertise, like bankruptcy, workers' compensation, that sort of thing, we probably would not be able to do it and refer it up to Anchorage. But everything else is pretty much they can come and we can talk to about it and see whether or not we can help.
And do the kids get to travel at all as being part of teen court?
Well, of course, yeah, right? I mean, field trip's a big thing. Last year, where were we? We were in
Anchorage.
Anchorage. And why were we there?
The annual conference meeting.
Right. And what's the name of the organization?
The United Youth Courts of Alaska.
Yeah. There you go.
I was on the board of that. I'm glad I remember.
What other places have we been?
I've been to Homer, Ketchikan.
Here.
Oh, yeah, here. Yeah. We had one here. And then there's Anchorage. And this year it's Fairbanks.
Fairbanks.
Right? Yeah, Fairbanks. So if you want to go to Fairbanks, join teen court and do stuff.
And so I guess that's a natural transition to say that we are recruiting for new members. We're starting a class November 7th, and it will be Monday and Wednesday nights, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Kodiak High School Choral Auditorium Choral Pod. And there'll be some other classes that will be held at the courthouse as time goes on, but the students will receive a schedule, and they'll see as to when those days are. The carrot in front of the stick here, if you will, is students who do complete the class and actually pass the exam get half a credit in social studies towards their high school graduation sufficiency. So that's really important. And then we've also get another half credit if you stay with the program and you volunteer a certain number of hours, and we can prove that.
It's 90.
It's an elective credit. Yeah. So that's part of the reason why we're here, is because we're actually going to be starting a class here pretty soon.
Yeah, and I have the schedule in front of me. You have a lot of guest speakers. Can you talk a little bit about what the role of the guest speakers are, and who are they?
Sure. We try to get the legal community involved with the program, and so by doing that, I asked certain people to come in and speak. So, for example, we'll have two police officers come and do this. One is fairly brand new, Detective Putney. Actually, I think he's now Sergeant Putney. Officer Holden, who's also used to be or is the resource officer at the high school. So they'll talk about a series of things like reasonable suspicion and probable cause and warrant issues, and Officer Holden usually does a demonstration about the effects of being under the influence of alcohol or any other drug, and he has these impaired goggles that students can wear and try to either bounce a ball or something like that. Also, he does a demonstration of a portable breath test by using mouthwash. You remember that, Robert, don't you?
I remember that.
Where the students will swish mouthwash and then immediately do a PBT to show how that instrument works as far as reading alcohol on the breath, and as an indication of someone having had consumed potentially alcohol. So that's part of it. And then the other group of people are relating to the district attorney's office, the public defender agency, what roles they do for their work. Of course, the judge. We'll have the judge come in January and talk to the class. And then the other big thing that we end up doing is a lot of practice mock hearings, so practice hearings at the courthouse. We actually teach the students how to speak in public, because many of these eighth graders or ninth graders or whatever the grade they're in have not done public speaking. And it's kind of a scary situation to be in a sterile courtroom staring at a bunch of people that, though you know or you may not know, and talking about a case that you're just reading off a script or whatever. So the idea is many-fold. One is to get them introduction to criminal law and the justice system and constitutional law and that sort of thing. But then the second part of it is that they get to learn how to do public speaking, because each one of them will be required to get, in order to get a passing grade, to do some portion of the mock hearing.
All right. And so we only have one or two more minutes. Sure. Probably 1 minute. But is there anything else you wanted to say to teens who want to get involved?
Well, if you do want to get involved, I would encourage you to call the Kodiak Teen Court office, which is 486-3550. Or if you know somebody that's on youth court and you see them at class or whatever, please contact them and say, hey, I'm interested. What do I need to do? We will be recruiting next week over at the private school, St. Mary's and Kodiak Christian School, and then as well as the middle school the following day. So we'll try to hit those students, eighth graders as well. So.
All right. So you've been listening to Talk of a Rock, and we've been speaking with some people from Teen Court today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.